It's Wednesday and time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. With us today is Jonathan Ellis, reporter and columnist for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And Jonathan, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Carl.
Also with us on the line is John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. And John, it's good to talk with you again as well.
Thanks, Carl.
Well, independent gubernatorial candidate Mike Myers is suing Secretary of State Jason Gant for not allowing him to replace his original running mate with Laura Hubbell. Gant has said he can't certify Hubbell as a new candidate without a law specifically allowing a substitution. And Jonathan, do you expect Myers' lawsuit to be successful?
Well, I mean, the outside consultants or experts in this issue who we've talked to said that there's probably a pretty good chance that it would be successful, simply because I think there have been some rulings, federal rulings in the past that say you can't make it harder for third parties or independents. You can't put, you know, additional burdens on them for, you know, ballot access and things like that. And this is obviously a little different, but, you know, there's some federal precedent saying that you can't, you know, discriminate in some way or, you know, make it more difficult. The point of here is that there is a mechanism in place for the major parties to, replace somebody as lieutenant governor, and the mechanism doesn't exist here for the independents, and so, you know, it's very likely that it would succeed for Mike Myers.
So it's just a situation, Jonathan, that this is just something that never came up before.
Correct. I mean, I don't think this has ever happened before.
Well, John Hunter, in looking at the Mike Myers independent campaign, does this situation have any impact on the campaign one way or the other?
Well, it's probably good publicity that someone might perceive Mike as a fighter, as someone who is willing to challenge establishment and those sorts of things. So I think if you're a third party candidate like that and you lack name recognition, I think any name recognition would be helpful, but I think especially something like this is probably very good for him. Now, you know, very good, a good improvement off a very small base would still not be a big factor in the race, but from his standpoint, I think it would be positive.
In other news from this week, a judge is allowing former U.S. Senate candidate Annette Bosworth's attorney, Brandon Tolliver, to withdraw from her case. She's charged with some election law violations. And Jonathan Ellis, the latest in the Annette Bosworth saga, what is going on here? Why is her attorney withdrawing from the case?
saga is the right word.
Saga.
Well, I mean, there were, interestingly, I mean, the attorney wrote, Annette Bosworth a letter indicating that she needed to meet certain conditions in order for him to continue, to want to continue. This got introduced into the court record. But basically, I think their recollection, there were four conditions. One of them that Chad Haber, her husband, discontinue his... I hesitate to use these words, but the political run for Attorney General, as some people maybe know, he's thinking about or trying to seek the Libertarian nomination to challenge Marty Jackley. That was one of the conditions there. Another condition was that she sort of distanced herself from a spokesman, Lee Stranahan. And then there was an allegation made that she had not paid the retainer, which I think was $25,000. So that was, these things were not done, or not done to the satisfaction of the lawyer, and so he is asking to withdraw from the case.
And this is, as mentioned, used the word saga. John Hunter, the primary election was more than 2 months ago. How much longer do you think that... people who, like us, I guess, will keep talking about Annette Bosworth? How much longer will she be in the news?
I think it's going to be a long time. I mean, this is almost reality TV, and so there could be movies and books and miniseries or something on this. It, just the way it's gone so far, I would expect other things to pop up. A logical ending point, of course, would be whenever the sentence, or, presuming there will be some guilty thing along the way, when that sentence is announced, that would be a logical one. But, you know, she still has a big campaign debt hanging out there, which could extend this thing a little longer. Last I saw was, you know, 123,000 net debt, so that could pop up in the news again anytime. This particular case may get delayed because of the lack of an attorney, and there could be all sorts of other things. So I would not predict an end to this very soon.
Well, John Hunter, do you think this is important that we do talk about it, that we do follow this story?
Well, that's an excellent question, Carl, because it's kind of gone beyond, you know, she's no longer a political candidate. So and you can talk to Jonathan too, but it's kind of shifted a little bit from being a political issue, which it still is, but also to a news issue, you know, kind of a more of a general news about someone who is not running for office anymore. But it all started in politics, so that's kind of where it resides. And both the Mike Myers and the Annette Bosworth cases, you know, kind of may involve election reform in South Dakota. So in some senses, this may be the catalyst for other things that may happen later.
Jonathan Ellis, your thoughts?
Yeah, thanks, John, for throwing this over here at me. I mean, here's the deal. I mean, yeah, it started as a political campaign. I mean, she raised a lot of money. She obviously didn't get many votes, but she has the big debt, as John said. But, you know, the underlying issue here is that, I mean, she's facing some pretty serious charges when it comes to, you know, the integrity of our elections. And so the underlying reason for, you know, why she has these, forget the fact that there's all these, you know, the sideshow with the lawyers and things like that. You know, the underlying reason of why she's in the news or why, you know, is the integrity of the election process. I mean, she's being accused of fraudulently submitting, you know, petitions to get on the ballot, and that's I would say that's a serious issue, and that would be, that would be worth covering by itself. And then, you know, throw in the fact that there's the other aspects of this that make it more interesting. You know, so of course it's going to be covered. I mean, we've been chided a little bit for covering it, but I will say this: there's a lot of demand, a lot of interest in these stories. You know, we've noticed that in terms of web traffic on these stories. So, you know, there are clearly a lot of people who are interested in it.
There was a film crew that was following her around. Is that still going on? Was there, I don't know if it was Lee Stranahan or who was making a movie? Jonathan, do you know anything about that?
I believe this, and I've not had any personal contact with Lee Stranahan, but I believe that that's correct, that, you know, he's sort of an independent, conservative, you know, filmmaker, journalist type, and I believe that he's also was engaged, you know, in making some kind of documentary.
Well, moving on from Annette Bosworth, polls are coming out, and there's a new one on the U.S. Senate race by Nielsen Brothers Polling, and Northern Plains News has former Republican Governor Mike Rounds leading Democratic challenger Rick Wyland by nearly 13 points. Independent Larry Pressler is at 14% in this poll. Gordon Howey at 4.1, 8.6% undecided. John Hunter, anything surprising with these numbers?
No, I don't think they are surprising. In fact, I think if you had observers might guess this, that Governor Rounds would be in the lead, that Rick would be second, and by some amount, but not an insurmountable amount. I think early on we may have been surprised that an independent could be, or two independents combined could be, nearly 20%. So, no, I don't think there is... in particular with those, and I don't think either of the candidates probably would dispute that the way they're set up, but they may talk a little bit about, you know, likely voters versus all South Dakotans versus party loyalists and so forth.
Is there anything in these numbers, Jonathan Ellis, that provide insight into whether Larry Pressler is taking more votes away from Mike Rounds or Rick Wyland?
Well, I mean, if you go from the premise that, you know, if you look at the Democrats make up roughly about 34% of the registered voters, and Republicans, I think, about 46%. Both those candidates are polling below that in this poll.
So it would indicate that potentially that Larry Pressler is taking votes from both. But I think if you look at the conclusions of the poll, that Larry Pressler is taking more votes potentially from Rick Weiland. Now, the poll to me is we don't do stories on polls. Because we don't have access to what went into the poll. I mean, we obviously will do a story if we do our own poll, but so we don't. So it's hard to know a little bit of what's in this poll. I'm familiar with some of the internal polling that has been done on the Republican side, and not surprisingly, maybe this would show Mike Rounds being light on votes, and maybe Rick Weiland a little bit heavier on votes than what the Republican internal polls are saying. And Larry Pressler has a bigger take in those polls as well. And then you see that recently, it may have been last week, that the Democrats, Rick Weiland's campaign, released a poll. It was a Democratic polling firm done on behalf of the Democratic Party that showed Rick Weiland even closer than this poll. So, it's hard to gauge where all of this is at. I mean, I would say that this is sort of a mid-range compared to some of the other polling that we're in terms of where they're at compared to some of the other polls that I've been made aware of.
John Hunter, we were just talking a little bit earlier about, should we be talking about and covering Annette Bosworth? That brings up the whole, there's always that criticism of covering polls, the whole horse race mentality. Does looking at these polls that come out give us any sort of perspective or understanding to these races?
I don't think so, and we don't really cover partisan polls. The results are sent to us all the time, of course, from candidates and parties and so forth. But although I think we might give a little more credibility to those than we would the what you might call the money race. There's so many reports about who raises money the fastest that it almost seems to be a race in itself, and that we think is really not relevant to the race itself. So polls can be interesting, and especially if there's a big news event that might happen, and we'd see a similar polling firm taking one before and one after the big event, you see how much change, that might be interesting to us.
We're coming down towards the end of summer, even though it's still a little early August, but Labor Day isn't that far away. Jonathan Ellis, do you think that the campaigns will change much after Labor Day, both the Senate campaign, the gubernatorial campaign, and also the U.S. House race?
Typically, that's the traditional time in which the campaigns sort of ramp up and start the sprint to the finish. That's when typically you're going to see a lot more advertising. You're going to perhaps see maybe more negative advertising than you have seen previously, and I don't think we've really seen any negative advertising yet that I can recall. But I mean that's typically the season when, frankly, and this is talking about polling, but this point of in the summer, not a lot of people are even really paying attention. But after Labor Day is a time period when people traditionally start to pay a little more attention to what's happening politically. So yeah, I mean I would expect you see some debates. And so I would expect then people will be paying attention, and that's when the campaigns are ramping up to try to vie for the attention.
John Hunter, do you see that these races, maybe the flavor of the races of the campaign so far will start to change, or do you think the strategy for all these campaigns is pretty much set?
No, I agree with Jonathan. I think you'll see a ramping up, or at least, for candidates who are way behind, maybe a little desperation if they're close, trying to focus on an issue that may be able to sway those who haven't decided yet. But what I've kind of been in the back of my mind all this time is discussion of the EB-5 thing. And I know both Susan Wismer is starting to talk a little bit about that, trying to link that situation to Governor Dugard, even though he was lieutenant governor during that time. But also in the Senate race, that really hasn't been a lot of that that people have tried to attach to Governor Rounds. So I would, if I had to make a bold prediction, I would say that issue would start to pop pretty soon. Whether it's successful or not, I have no idea. And maybe their consultants say it's not going to help, so don't do it. I don't know. But that may become an issue.
think things will turn a little more negative?
Yeah, I think so. Again, agreeing with Jonathan that I think the later in the campaign these things start to pop up. And when we saw Larry Pressler lose to Tim Johnson 18 years ago, it got negative right at the end. I mean, it was probably within 3 weeks that it really turned harsh, and so that would be possible too. You know, if it can make a difference, the consultants tell the candidate it can make a difference, they'll do it.
Jonathan, in a recent column for the Argus Leader, you pondered what would have happened if Senator Tim Johnson hadn't run for re-election in 2008, and what that would mean for the Democrats now. Would they have been, or would they be in a better position in the state today if Senator Johnson hadn't sought that third term?
I think they would. I mean, I think you can argue that they would be. And, you know, nothing, not to take away, I mean, you know, Senator Johnson's comeback was very remarkable, and people, you know, in the spring and summer of 2007, as he recovered from the brain hemorrhage, you know, wondered what the future would be. You know, whether he would seek a third term, and you know, finally, you know, he finally did announce that he was going to run again, and for him, it's a remarkable comeback. You know, I would argue though that, you know, Senator Johnson hasn't been able to be the effective statewide leader, given the limitations that he has with the recovery from his brain hemorrhage, and that's been a problem, I think, for the state Democratic Party. I think in my column, you know, I speculate that Stephanie Hursa Salen would have been the Democratic nominee, and she would have won very easily, I think, in that situation, and so she would be running for re-election today, running for a second term. And as I point out, I mean, she would probably still be in a very tough race, just as other red state Democrats are. But I think that the Democrats would have a better shot, certainly, if she were running for a second term of holding that seat.
These what-ifs are always interesting to talk about. And John Hunter, do you share some of Jonathan Ellis's thoughts on what-if Senator Johnson?
It was an interesting column on how that played out, and I agree that Stephanie Hursa Sandlin is a dynamic political figure in South Dakota, and had she, you know, probably every election that things could turn on that. And again, if she had defeated Kristi Noem in their matchup, then I think the Democratic Party would be in a different shape. In other words, if Stephanie was still in the U.S. House. So, I do think that each one of these elections is a fork in the road, but there are also natural pendulum swings too. If it goes far one way, it tends to come back the other way too, whether it's a short period of time or a long period of time. I still think that the Democratic Party has a future in South Dakota that is not always lost there. But, boy, there's a lot of work yet to be done, and there isn't, at the moment, these natural leaders that Senator Daschle or others may have provided.
Well, finally, I just want to mention that the Hill newspaper has put together its annual list of the 50 most beautiful people on Capitol Hill, and both the Representative Kristi Noem and Senator John Thune made that list. And in a survey put together by the U of M researcher Eric Osterheimer for his Smart Politics blog, he looked at 10 years of the annual list and put South Dakota with the highest rate of members on the most beautiful list. South Dakota, number one by far, with a rate of 60%. Alaska, a distant second, with 25%. Jonathan Ellis, is should South Dakota be proud for sending such attractive people to Washington?
No, and what I want to know is, was that study funded with a federal grant?
And John Hunter, what are your thoughts?
Carl, I thought you were number 55 or 56 in there somewhere. Should have been the top 50.
Oh, that's nice. Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. And John Hunter, thanks for joining the program.
Thanks, Carl.
And Jonathan, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you, Carl.
John Hunter is publisher of the Madison Daily Leader, and Jonathan Ellis is a reporter and columnist for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. The Dakota Political Junkies are a regular Wednesday feature of Dakota Midday. This is South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up after a short break, we'll talk with Janine Stang, who's singing the national anthem in every state. South Dakota is her 45th state, and she's singing in Milbank tomorrow. And then later this hour, we'll talk with Belle Fouche author John English, who has a pair of new books illustrating the history of the Black Hills and the American cowboy with vintage photographs.